Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to the Back Row Fantasy Show with your hosts, Jeremy Barker, Aaron Arms, and Chad Middle.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Back Row Fantasy Show with me, your host, Bark. And to my left is Arms, not Anonymous. And to my right is not Anonymous, it's Niddle.
You could say who I am on this podcast.
You would have to listen to another one to know what I'm talking about. But how's anyone else doing out there? How's everybody doing?
How's anyone else?
Yeah.
Man, I'm doing great tonight. Can't wait to jump back in this rookie rundown, baby.
Swell. I'm doing swell. Thanks.
You're
for
doing,
asking.
Swimmingly. You're doing swimmingly. Yeah, everything's going swimmingly. We got a nice little episode going on. We've got a Steve Slayton interview to end this sucker with.
Houston Texans
running back, great guy. We were just talking about, wasn't it?
Just how good he was in college.
Not only college, but his rookie year, he was phenomenal.
He was a stud.
Absolutely.
He was a stud for me. I mean, injuries and Arian Foster, just a bad combination to have.
Yeah, but, you know, how many guys can say, I went into the National Football League and I ran for over 1,000 yards? Not just that question, but... as a rookie.
Yeah.
Like, Steve's... Yeah.
Not many. We'll be lucky to get two this year.
Yeah. Major credit to Steve Slayton. He was an absolute animal his first year in the league, and he was a consummate pro. And he played for multiple teams and chipped in and helped out on multiple teams, and he enjoyed it. From the interview, you know, you'll hear one thing. He enjoyed it. You've got to appreciate and enjoy things. And
especially when it's a grind, man. I mean, making it to the NFL is a freaking grind. From when you're in middle school, start first lifting weights, stuff like that. I mean, imagine the time Steve Slayton put in just for one season in the sun.
Yeah, talent doesn't take you everywhere. Hard work doesn't take you everywhere. The combination of talent, hard work, and opportunity.
And passion.
Yeah. Yeah, and
good fortune.
You got to put it all together, be in the right place at the right time. I mean, just think about it. A couple years ago, there was a kid from West Virginia, high school in West Virginia, that ran for 700 yards in a game.
Oh, my God.
What's his name?
Nobody.
Exactly. Exactly. So this kid obviously has talent, but everything else didn't stack up to where he ends up being even in the pros.
Wow.
So, I mean, the combination of someone like Steve Slayton to be able to put all this together and get his shot. That's awesome. I mean,
took advantage of it. Just again, it was bad opportunity, bad circumstances that kind of brought his career to a close. But dude, always loved Steve Slayton.
Me too, man. I was super excited that I got, you know, the opportunity to interview him. I say I because you two were unfortunately not able to make it, and that does suck, and it's unfortunate. But at the same time, the man came on our show and he talked to us and. He's a great dude, so I'm excited for everybody to listen to that coming up. And we've also still got roughly 4 to 5 really good interviews with really interesting people scheduled for the future. Not sure when. People are busy. Life is hectic. But some solid commitments out there from folks, and makes me happy. That's part of the reason we started doing this show was to talk to people about football and also talk to people who've played the sport of football.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. So you ready to jump into this?
It's getting gritty.
Voices are getting gritty.
That's getting gritty.
Speaking of gritty.
So
this
we're
wide
going
receiver
to,
class is quite gritty.
It is a little bit gritty. There is definitely no clear-cut guy to magic erase the competition.
No. There's just not.
Yeah. There's no Batman amongst these guys.
There's not.
Like, honestly.
But there's a ton of guys who could. Like, there's like 5 guys who could just have absolutely stud seasons, and it's not the top 2 or 3 guys in this draft.
It seemed like everyone who was the big name and you're thinking this is the team they should go to because they can walk in and be a number one, didn't really get that opportunity. Really what happened is smart teams drafted smart.
Yeah.
Good teams drafted good players. And, you know, maybe the opportunity is not available immediately, but they're good for a long time for a reason because they know what they're doing. Whereas you've got bad teams who need a wide receiver who are like, I'm thinking I'm going to take a crack at this outside linebacker, even though my wide receiving corps is desolate.
Yeah. If you need a wide receiver, draft a wide receiver. Yes. And that's what we did have a couple teams do that this year, but they also drafted a lot of your top guys went into a number two role, clear cut number two role, like yeah. Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk, that Cortland Sutton, your top three guys, arguably top three, all went into clear cut number two roles within their team. And who knows how that's going to translate into the fantasy football world.
Absolutely. So basically what we're going to do for you here, just like we did on the last episode, we're going to run through the wide receivers and give you them versus the veterans. Where are you going to take them in your dynasty startup or redraft startup? Where do these guys land? Who where do they slot in between? What two veterans are these rookies going to be picked in between, or where should you take them? More is the question there. So let's start out with the first wide receiver taken in the draft, DJ Moore. We've talked about our outlook for him a little bit. Let's touch on that a little more and discuss where we're drafting him in dynasty startups.
I know, Arms, you're big on the Carolina receiving corps. So hit me. Or not so high.
Help me, Arms. Help me.
I don't have a lot of faith in much of anybody, really, in this year's draft class to make an impact immediately. Because even DJ Moore, who's, you know, quite the athlete, he just really fits in with, you know, what they've already got to me and Curtis Samuel and Christian McCaffrey. I think they're all very similar type players, and I worry that his value is going to be more to the team than fantasy-wise.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think he's that great of a true natural wide receiver. Route-running ability, playmaking ability he has, but he's just not that big, that dominant, that physically imposing, but he is shifty. I'm interested to see. I think he's going to steal some receptions away from Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield. I think they'll have some more like drag routes, in and out, out cuts, just trying to get the ball in his hands a couple yards off the line of scrimmage and let him take it upfield. So I don't see him having a monstrosity of a year. And as far as where I'm drafting him, I can't even draft him in the top 25, to be quite honest. He's nothing more than a wide receiver three upside for year one. For year one. Now, you know, 3 years out might be a little bit different story. But next year, I don't see him turning into a Tyreek Hill right off the bat. I don't see him having a T.Y. Hilton year. I don't even see him having like a Brandon Cooks, big yardage, low receptions year. I have trouble drafting him inside the top 25.
Here's where I've seen him. Here's, in startups. I got a couple startup examples on DJ Moore. One pre-draft, one post-draft, and they're very similar. They're not far apart, pre-draft and post-draft. Seen him taken between Golden Tate and Sammy Watkins.
That's because people go way too high on Sammy Watkins, but anyhow.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't take him, in front of or right behind Golden Tate, I think, but guys that went ahead of DJ Moore, Alshon Jeffrey, Doug Baldwin, Josh Gordon, T.Y., Thielen, Landry, Juju, and then the usual names that are going high right now, Diggs, Cooks, A.J. Green, Tyreek, Allen Robinson, Julio.
So roughly number is he coming in at?
What like number?
28th? Something in that range?
Yeah, roughly after the 20th wide receiver taken, so...
You're seeing him go off the board inside that top 25?
Right after 20, 21, 22. And I definitely – that's too high.
My God, I would – Dez Bryant doesn't have a team, and I'd take him over DJ Moore.
No, I wouldn't do that. But I'm the consummate Dez Bryant
absolutely
here.
Would. Can't see a path of immediate success for you.
But I see your Golden Tate argument. I'm not taking him over Golden Tate. But
I'm not taking him over Marvin Jones either.
ADP-wise, let me give you the next five receivers after Golden Tate. It's Jordy Nelson, Michael Crabtree, Sammy Watkins, Juju, and Chris Hogan.
Juju should be way above those guys, in my opinion.
I think Crabtree deserves a little bit of a bump.
I'm thinking about DJ Moore amongst those other guys, not named Juju you just mentioned.
After that, that's outside the top 25. Then you get into Pierre Garçon, Emmanuel Sanders, Corey Davis, Marvin Jones. I see him right in there.
It true gets crapshooty. It gets crapshooty into the late 20s.
But that puts him at a wide receiver 3. You can draft. I think you can draft DJ Moore confidently as a wide receiver 3. But he doesn't have wide receiver 2 or 1 or wide receiver 1 upside year
in
1.
In a 16-teamer, though, that puts him as a wide receiver 2. And I just
borderline.
There's other players I'd rather have than DJ Moore. And part of that is Cam's lack of success with a true stud receiver. He's just, outside of Steve Smith, there's really been nobody.
Yeah. Redraft, I'm not taking him, you know, in those late 20s. But I do believe in Dynasty. I'm probably taking him as wide receiver 27, 8, 9. I mean, just based on upside alone, I think he has the potential to be Carolina's number 1. I think Funchess has regression written all over him, and I think DJ Moore could be part of that. But you've got McCaffrey. You've got Olsen. I don't see him putting up anything better than wide receiver 3 stats.
So put a stat line on it. Are you thinking 70 and 800?
I'm thinking 60. Whoa. 60.
Whoa.
For 750 and 6.
I got him pegged at like 45 and 750.
I think he can put 60 on the board. I just don't like Funchess enough to...
I mean, I'm just thinking McCaffrey's still going to get... If he's got to eat into McCaffrey's catches to get to 70 or to 60 catches. McCaffrey's going to catch 75 balls, supposedly. I mean, he did last year. So I don't know how you can take away from getting the ball into a proven playmaker's hands, even a year two proven playmaker. Also, you say Greg Olsen's back. Greg Olsen's a legit threat down the middle of the field. I'm going to shoot low on him. 45, 750, I think he can get into the end zone a handful of times. So wide receiver 3 upside's as high as I'm going on DJ Moore.
I'm with you.
Next, you know, you got Courtland Sutton. He wasn't drafted quite that high, but that's who I see going after him. But we'll stick to the theme here. Calvin Ridley will go next. He got drafted before Sutton. Sutton was the third receiver off the board. Ridley, I'm seeing, you know, close to Sutton. I mean, Ridley's going after Sutton in the two that I saw, wedged in between Marvin Jones and Dez Bryant. I think if you're going to take that chance on DJ Moore in the late 20s, it's not a stretch to pick Calvin Ridley as the wide receiver 30.
Man, I'd rather have 31. Ridley than DJ Moore.
Bang, I would myself, but...
Well, to me, Ridley's going to go and probably be the number 2. Whereas DJ Moore, I feel like his role just isn't defined yet.
Right. I think DJ Moore, I think they're going to discover quickly that he's the best wide receiver on the team. That's the reason I like DJ Moore so much. I don't think there's anybody.
I get that on argument. That team. I do. But, you know, Carolina has a bad wide receiving core. Well, just, you know, that's
right.
Why
and they're not a passing offense. That's why I won't be surprised if Ridley outproduces them. I'm not saying that at all. I just, the upside and the potential role of like their true go to guy, DJ Moore has that potential.
It wouldn't
role.
Surprise me if Carolina did not produce a 900 yard receiver this year. Not one.
Right. I'm with you. And that's why I like Calvin. I think Calvin Ridley could have 1,000 yards receiving. I do. Along with Julio Jones.
If Matt Ryan bounces back, it's not out of the question at all.
Yeah, I see. I'll be the first to say it, man. Julio Jones is about to see a career regression. I don't think he's at the top that he is. And it's partly because of Matt Ryan. That offense isn't as great as it was 2 or 3 years ago. But I think Calvin Ridley is truly that good to where he can eat into some of the targets of Julio Jones. I'm not saying Julio Jones is going to have diminishing athletic ability. I'm saying they got two legit offensive weapons at wideout on one each side of the field, and they are going to use that. Calvin Ridley is a great route runner all the way, and they can throw that, like who's going deep, who's coming under. You never know with those two on the field at the same time. So, I like Calvin Ridley in the top 25. I'd take a chance on him before anyone else.
So you had Sanu that had like 60-some receptions, 700 yards last year, and Taylor Gabriel's now gone as well.
Yep.
I mean, Austin Hooper is, you know, a couple touchdowns a couple weeks a year, and that's it. I mean, you start taking the targets away and giving those to Calvin Ridley, I think he quickly moves into that number two role, which we have seen be successful with Matt Ryan whenever, was it Harry Douglas for a while there? Was
a multitude of running mates.
1,000, 1,100 yards with Julio Jones. I mean, I think we've got that in Calvin Ridley, excuse me. And you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if he's, you know, far and away the number one receiver in this year's rookie draft class. And once again, number one being probably breaking 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, 70-ish receptions.
Right. Let's look at Mohamed Sanu's year last year. 67 receptions, 700 yards. He was kind of their underneath guy. Caught a lot of possession, pure possession receiver. High receptions, low yardage. I think you could just take those numbers, translate them, bam, right on to Ridley.
And add 2 yards a catch.
With more athleticism. Yeah, exactly. That's about 150 more yards. He's going to be approaching 1,000 yards with that right there. So, boom, I like Calvin Ridley in that role, number two role in Atlanta. I can't make it any clearer.
With a real-life, actual good quarterback, unlike he had for most of the year at Alabama.
True. Excellent point. Let's not take away his college numbers. Let's not take those and say he's not a great receiver because he doesn't have the numbers.
Whenever he came in, I mean, I believe broke the Alabama rookie or freshman receiving record, which was held by Amari Cooper, previously held by Julio Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, these are some great players ahead of him that he outproduced in college.
Who became great NFL players. Yes. So, dude, the talent is there. I'm very high on Calvin Ridley having a better than Juju last year. I mean, Juju took a while to come on. I think Calvin Ridley is, bam, immediate impact week one.
I think Ridley's going to be consistent the whole year versus big games, where the heck did he come from type player.
Can't disagree with that. I like Ridley too, so I'm on the same page. Cortland Sutton was the next guy off the board. To me, in Dynasty, it makes sense to draft him in that wide receiver 30 to 35 range, but you're going to have to wait on him. Yeah. I do not. You are not going to see fantasy consistency or fantasy production early from Sutton, barring injury.
As much as I like Sutton coming out, and I wanted him to go to a place that had an established, like...
You want him to be a number two.
Oh, yeah. I don't like the landing spot in Denver. You already said he's going to have to wait behind Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders for playing time. He's wide receiver 3. Who knows if the quarterback play is going to improve with Case Keenum? I mean, I like Case Keenum. He proved a lot last year. But I just don't know about Case Keenum. I don't know that he's the answer there. So you're talking 3 years out. 3 years out, they might still be looking for a franchise quarterback.
And they might still have Demaryius Thomas on the team in 3 years.
Right. Cortland Sutton has fantasy bust written all over him. Immediate fantasy bust, big time. But even 3 or 4 years down the road, I would draft him with extreme caution with nothing more than a 3-year flyer on him, to be quite honest.
Here's what I'm saying about Cortland Sutton.
I like him more than that.
He's Demaryius Thomas. He is 2.0. He's the same athlete Demaryius Thomas is. The problem is they already have him. And they've got, you know, I
agree.
They've got a good route runner in Emmanuel Sanders. They've got some really good players already in place, and it's going to take a hell of a performance from a rookie to start pushing those guys off the field.
Bingo. Right. But in a year or two, I think you could easily see Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton in those roles within 2 years.
And I agree 100%, but I'm just saying.
For year one, yeah, bust. You're not getting anything out of him, so temper your expectations. If you're not drafting him to put him on the taxi squad, I'm not sure what you're drafting him for.
To be clear, my problem with Cortland Sutton is more about the quarterback play, and I realize I got Case Keenum. I just don't know that Case Keenum is a long-time answer in Denver. That's why I question the short-term and long-term
I'm with you.
Fantasy impact of Cortland Sutton.
Yeah, redraft, he's not in the wide receiver 30 range. Redraft, I'm not taking him at all. Dynasty, yes. I mean, he's falling around the same place as Will Fuller, Dez Bryant, Nelson Agholor, Jameson Crowder. He's going ahead of those guys. He's going, you know, the Funchess and Watkins range right now, just a few spots away from DJ Moore. I think that's okay for Dynasty, but you better have a good wide receiver.
You better have Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah, you better have
Demaryius Thomas's handcuff.
Yeah, basically.
That's entirely too high. With the Will Fullers and Nelson Agholors and all, that's way too high to take a wide receiver handcuff.
Yes.
Plain and simple. There's no reason for you to own Cortland Sutton until you have 3 solid wide receivers already on your team. And guess what? He's going to be gone.
Next off the board was Dante Pettis to San Francisco. I like Dante Pettis. I wasn't really feeling him until he went to a great situation, but he went to a great situation. He has all of the ability and talent to be San Francisco's Sterling Shepard, in my opinion.
He's got all the ability and talent to be the number one off the day one in rookie training camp. I mean, he's a better athlete than Pierre Garçon. What is it, Marquise Goodwin? Does Marquise? I mean, I know
Marquise
he had
Goodwin was a bit of a revelation.
Yeah,
my goodness,
he proved a lot of doubters.
He proved
wrong.
A lot of doubters wrong, and they rewarded him.
I think Marquise Goodwin has some staying power in San Francisco, just because that wide receiver core has question marks.
Right,
but he was the. I mean, after what's his face went down, Garçon goes down. Yeah, then he becomes the only game in town. I just don't have much faith in a 5'9", 180-pound receiver.
Talking about Marquise?
Yeah.
And then there are other guys, 5'6".
Yeah, I mean.
And Trent Taylor. Like, they're slotted three starting wide receivers, Garçon, Goodwin, and Trent Taylor.
Like, I'm going to take Dante Pettis as, to me, probably the starter to go in on the outside immediately.
He's going in the wide receiver 40 range. I'm okay with that. Like, I don't think you're drafting him too early. I don't think he's going too late.
I'll take him over Courtland Sutton.
I will go. Man,
that's, no, I can't do that.
I see the argument there.
Big time talent. Sometimes you got to draft talent.
Not
in redraft. I'll take Dante Pettis in redraft.
Yeah,
over Sutton. But dynasty, give me Sutton all day long.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Dynasty, as bad as I just went off on Courtland Sutton, I'm not as high on Dante Pettis, I guess, as you, Arms. I like the situation. They have the opposite of what Denver has. They have a franchise quarterback now, a good offense projecting for 2018. I don't know that he's a part of that. I do think Marquise Goodwin has staying power. Pierre Garçon's a proven receiver. Trent Taylor didn't have a bad year for an unnamed rookie out of nowhere. And I have trouble fitting in a guy who never went over 900 yards receiving in college into an NFL offense and expect immediate production. You know, I mean, he wasn't even that productive in college in Dante Pettis. All the measurables, but no production.
Did he ever have a quarterback like Jimmy G?
He had a good quarterback. What was it? Not Luke Falk. Luke Falk was Washington State, but he had a good quarterback at Washington.
Browning.
Yeah, Jake Browning. Jake Browning was a Heisman contender 2 years ago. So, I mean,
what happened to him?
Let's just say Washington got exposed in the college football playoff 2 years ago. They dropped off, lost a few games last year, and Washington just didn't. Dante Pettis is the only guy that survived into the NFL draft. You know, he's the only guy that was like NFL marketable other than Vita Vea.
I mean, to look at what he did, you know, last year, not in 17, but in 16, 820 yards and 15 touchdowns. Like, to me, that just screams, I can catch in traffic. I can get it in the red zone and win. Like, that's
John Ross led the team in touchdowns that year, though.
Just for the
like
sake.
That was just a disgusting. Like, I think the Pac-12 was just that bad at defense.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, they just allowed that many touchdowns and Washington had a wide-open offense. You know, again, 800 yards receiving is not great in a wide-open offense.
How about the fact he walks in, and is at 6'1", he's the biggest receiver on the team by, like, 2 or 3 inches.
All right.
How crazy is that?
Garçon's that small?
He's like 5'11".
All right.
Here, the place Dante's going is D.D. Westbrook range, Michael Crabtree, Josh Doctson, Julian Edelman, Cameron Meredith. He's going around those guys in between, behind, in front of a little bit. That's the group.
Two of those four guys I really like a lot more.
Yeah, I'll take two of them over him, but I'll take him over the other two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me Crabtree.
Give me Allen Hurns. Did you say Allen Robinson or Allen Hurns?
No, not Allen
or Cam,
Robinson.
My bad, Cameron Meredith. Yeah. I like Cam Meredith.
I like Cameron Meredith.
In Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah, give me him instead of Dante Pettis as well. Next, we have Christian Kirk.
I'm going the other way. Cam Meredith went to New Orleans, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what we're...
He said, oh, I thought he said in Dallas. My bad.
I probably did.
Oh, no, he said Allen Hurns, Dallas, and then he switched. No, Cam
Meredith. Okay. Yeah,
Christian Kirk was the next one off the board. Kirk is going ahead of Dante Pettis and behind guys like Calvin Ridley, Courtland Sutton, and DJ Moore. He's going more in the range of Robert Woods, Nelson Agholor, Jamison Crowder, around wide receiver 35. Will Fuller, those are names that are surrounding Christian Kirk. I'm okay with that. I like Kirk. There's really nobody besides Larry Fitzgerald. for Josh Rosen or Sam Bradford or Mike Glennon or Kurt Warner or whoever to throw him the ball.
They cleared out all the Browns.
Cade McNown, you know, there's nobody else to throw to. So I like Kirk, and I think Kirk is going to be successful very early and often. So I actually like that one. I like it, that spot for redraft, and I like that spot for dynasty. I think it's a safe landing spot for
Kirk. Kirk was in the argument all year for first receiver coming off the board. I mean, it's crazy to me that he dropped to what, the fifth receiver coming off the board? That's nuts. And, you know, he goes to a situation to where he's, once again, we've said it before, learning from one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
And if he can turn the tutelage of Larry Fitzgerald into, you know, NFL success, he's got a chance to really be something special, particularly if Josh Rosen develops.
Yeah, if you're going to take a chance on a rookie wide receiver as your wide receiver three, I already said I like Calvin Ridley. But Christian Kirk's number two for immediate in redraft settings, and if immediate dynasty impact, Christian Kirk could have a big year. He really could. He could approach 1,000 yards. I think he gets to that 60 reception mark as the wide receiver two down there. I mean, they're going to be throwing the ball a little bit, I assume. You know, Bruce Arians leaving puts question marks over how much they're going to air it out. But, you know, historically, Arizona's put the ball in the air, and they produce a good wide receiver too, whether it's one of the small guys that you always bring up, arms. They always end up having a wide receiver too that's productive. Christian Kirk just might lock that down for 3, 4, 5 years.
I think what you get is that combination John Brown and Jared Brown, to where you never knew which one was going to get, you know, 5 receptions and 80 yards. I think Kirk kind of takes all of that and ends up being, you know, kind of the
5 to 8 reception a game guy.
Yeah, someone a little bit, you know, more consistent, yeah, and not having to guess on which Brown you're going to put in there.
And speaking of consistency, his college career was nothing but consistency. Right around 80 receptions, right around 1,000 yards, right around 9-10 touchdowns. All 3 years at Texas A&M.
That's pretty impressive.
I mean, his best year was actually his rookie year, or his freshman year. I mean, the guy was extremely consistent all 3 years. That's why I can see him translating that into the NFL immediately. I
agree 100%. And for that matter, the guy going right behind him in the real draft and rookie drafts and dynasty startup drafts, Anthony Miller, I think you have the exact same situation. You have one alpha male wide receiver in Allen Robinson.
Yeah.
Outside of that, you have no definite tight end threat, no definite number two receiver threat, and you also have possibly a young quarterback throwing to him, you know, with Mitchell Trubisky, you know, versus Josh Rosen if Bradford gets hurt early and often. But Anthony Miller's in the same position as Christian Kirk, and I like him right there with in front of or behind. I don't think you'd be wrong to take him, you know, wide receiver 35, just like Kirk in redraft or dynasty. I like it. Allen Robinson's coming off an injury. Mitchell Trubisky, I think, is going to improve. I like Kirk and Miller almost the exact same. I give Christian Kirk the very slightest of edges, but I won't be surprised at all if Anthony Miller is the best statistical wide receiver this year out of this draft.
Including Ridley. Man, what a lead-in for Anthony Miller, Barker. Long-winded.
I am believing.
But full of great information. I am too, man. I love this guy. Said it day in, day out, every time his name gets brought up. He's 5'11", plays like he's 6'5". Actually has the wingspan of a 6'5 guy. Catches anything thrown in his way. He's going to be a wonderful, wonderful target for Mitchell Trubisky in year two. I think he has a chance to lead the Bears in receiving year one. I mean, I'm high on Allen Robinson too. But if you think about Mitchell Trubisky, his progression is going to be inside out, meaning he's going to find his receivers over the middle, get comfortable, settle into a game plan from the inside, which opens up the downfield passing. I think Anthony Miller could come in and catch 6-7 balls week in, week out with pure consistency all year long. And I realize what that is. That's approaching 90 receptions on the year. I mean, the guy could be an absolute target monster. And I'm not scared of Anthony Miller one bit.
I think Miller's going to be fine. I don't know how good that passing offense can be yet. I believe in Mitchell Trubisky, but he's still, you know, very young. Doesn't have a lot of great game tape on him yet. I think he's going to take off. I really do. I think he's going to excel, and someone is going to be the benefactor of that. In addition to Allen Robinson, I think Robinson is going to be probably a 1,300 yard receiver there. They still have, I know this sounds stupid because he barely plays, but they still have Kevin White. They did pick up Taylor Gabriel. You know, so Kirk might have a little bit of trouble getting on the field initially, but
Anthony Miller.
Or, yeah, Miller, my bad. Miller might have a little bit of trouble getting on the field initially, but once he does, I think he's a better athlete than Gabriel. And we all know Kevin White's going to get injured.
Yeah.
Boom. So. All right. So the next guy, not in the same league to me, the guy that got drafted by Pittsburgh, I got a special lead-in for this guy.
Go.
The lead-in for this man, drafted by the Steelers, is James Washington.
Jesus.
Gosh. Presidential wide receiver extraordinaire, James Washington. All right, I had to do it, man. It's just such a presidential name.
It is. Old Jimmy
Washington.
Old Jimmy Washington.
Old James Washington. Redraft, not touching him. Dynasty, I like him okay, but man, I made this argument on Twitter the other day. Somebody, there was an article, is James Washington going to be this year's Juju Smith-Schuster?
They have no. Juju Smith-Schuster.
He's not going to be. You know why? Because Antonio Brown is there. Martavis Bryant was uninterested and coming off a lost, what, two seasons?
Yeah.
Okay, so of course Juju's going to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Juju's going to be good. And
that's why
he's
going in the top 25 exactly, receivers. I exactly. mean, he's going to be a great number two.
He produced with an uninterested and in the doghouse Martavis Bryant. Great. James Washington is not going to produce over a second-year Juju, and in his prime, Antonio Brown. You might get a few games, fantasy relevance out of him. He's not going to be Juju. You don't need to redraft him. And if you're taking him in Dynasty, I put him right at that wide receiver 55 range.
Yeah,
I was going to say he's going to be in the 50s because what is he? He's a handcuff to one of the other two receivers they've got in Pittsburgh already, sadly. And I think he's very talented, but we've seen this before with Pittsburgh. It's like they keep stockpiling talent just to let somebody else walk whenever their contract's up. And I think, I could be wrong, but I feel like AB's got 2 or 3 years left, and Juju definitely has 3 years left.
I think James Washington is around that Paul Richardson, Allen Hurns, Jordy Nelson range.
I'd rather have Allen Hurns, no doubt about it.
I think I would, too.
Man, he puts up video game numbers in college, so.
He did.
In the Dynasty, Big 12.
Dynasty, you want to draft him and stash him? Fine.
I'm not
fine.
Touching him in redraft, though. He's just buried. I mean, there's not much else to say. I mean, we could talk about him and the talent, but in the end game is he's their wide receiver 3, and Ben Roethlisberger isn't going to throw for 5,500 yards with 3 guys ahead of him on the depth chart when you count Le'Veon Bell. Yeah. Le'Veon Bell caught 80 balls last year, 85 balls last year. I mean, James Washington is hurting for targets. Literally, Ben Roethlisberger has to throw for 5,500 yards. Or somebody has to get hurt for James Washington to be relevant.
All right, think Cortland Sutton situation, but worse.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's what it amounts out to be. Better receivers in front of him, and it's just – and they're younger, more talented. I mean, he's got a very rough way to see the field. It's going to take injury for him to have relevance.
Agreed. Agreed.
Oh, were you expecting me to talk about James Washington?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm done with James.
I do think he's, you know, one of the most talented receivers in this year's draft. Just a terrible situation.
I think he's talented, yeah. I absolutely think he's talented. I mean, draft and stash, like, I'm not going to let him fall, you know, farther than round 3 in a pure rookie draft. Like, if he's at the end of round 2, I'm going to grab him and stash him. I mean, that's
– especially if you have a two-year taxi.
There. Yeah, tons of upside there. But redraft or counting on him in a startup to be a starter at some point this year, no.
If you have him as your wide receiver 3, you are in trouble.
Yeah.
You are in absolute trouble.
Absolutely. That's why if you have Allen Hurns, you could possibly not be in trouble.
You brought up dynasty rookie drafts, and I brought up my main league, and the person that drafted James Washington drafted Juju last year and still has him.
Oh, yeah.
So he's just a handcuff.
Yeah. Oh, Neil. Old guest of the show, Neil. Yep, absolutely. That's
a fine pick when you have Juju or you have Antonio Brown. I mean, he's a handcuff.
Yeah.
Taxi squad handcuffs. You got to love them.
Let's do some quick hits here. We've got the Steve Slayton interview going on, and we'll probably put tight ends in the next show with IDP. DJ Chark. Not redrafting him. I'll take him as a dynasty stash. There's a log jam there, though. If you're in a startup, DJ Chark, not happening for me.
Talk about that logjam a little bit more. I mean, I know you're big.
Yeah, D.D. Westbrook is could be really solid in year two. Keelan Cole could be really solid in year two. Marquise Lee has always been solid the last couple of years. And I just, if you're in a startup and you're counting on someone to give you fantasy production, unless DJ Chark is far and away the best receiver on that team, which is unknown at this point, I just don't think you can take that risk in a startup.
Now I got to play those names against you. Those names you just gave are not great names. They're not great names,
but they're producers.
They've done nothing.
Keelan Cole did something at the end of last year.
He had like two decent games. But I'm just saying, the logjam isn't quite as jammed as you might think it is. I mean, it's not like he's staring Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, and he's staring Keelan Cole, D.D. Westbrook, and Marquise Lee in the face. I'm not saying go out and draft D.J. Chark. I'm not saying that. But his road to the field is not that jammed up. There's not a roadblock in there. There's not a year in, year out Pro Bowler in front of him, or even no one in front of him. He can go in and win wide receiver two right away.
I could see four wide receivers on that team getting 700 yards this year.
Yeah,
and not a single one of them breaking eight.
I don't disagree with that.
Here's the thing, though. DJ Chark is the best athlete on the team today.
Field stretch. What I'm saying, go into the field stretcher role, use that athleticism. He could be your guy that only catches 40 balls before your 799 yards that you're saying.
Here's all I can say. Keelan Cole, last three games of the year, put up nearly 400 yards. Last three games. I love the way guys end seasons, especially when they get the chance. He got the chance. He capitalized. D.D. Westbrook played six games. Only six games as a rookie. As a rookie playing six games with 330 yards, there's potential there.
There's
just a lot of potential. There's a lot of youth and a lot of potential in Jacksonville, and DJ Chark is either going to add to that youth and potential, or he has to be the guy. He has to come into camp, and they have to be like, wow, he's better than everything we got, so we're going to start him.
He's one to keep an eye on the preseason because he could, with his athleticism, take that leap above the other guys.
Right. Yeah. Let's simplify the game we're playing. You know, we're saying, where are you going to draft these guys against the other NFL wide receiver? Where are you drafting DJ Chark within the Jacksonville Jaguars depth chart? Who are you taking 1, 2, 3, 4?
I mean, off the top of your head. I'm in the minority. Keelan Cole is my one. I think he's going to be real. I think Keelan Cole is going to be the real deal and be a very solid receiver for Jacksonville. I don't think you can discount Marquise Lee. I think Marquise Lee is really solid. I think if anything, DJ Chark could step over D.D. Westbrook.
Yeah, as a field. See, if I'm going to put these guys in a 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm going to go Marquise Lee. I'm going to go DJ Chark. Then I'm going to go Keelan Cole and D.D. Westbrook. I'm just not a fan of. I mean, he had some numbers.
There's a lot of debate that can be had in that Jacksonville wide receiver corps. So I don't disagree.
He just ain't strong. He's far and away got the most upside right now, and without seeing him on the field. And what we've seen this before. We've seen people from LSU not do jack in college,
right?
And turn around and just take the pros by storm.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if he did that. I mean, he's
there's a lineage there.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got the athleticism. Once again, he's got the most talent athletically on the team right now from a wide receiver standpoint, and it's probably really not close.
It's an LSU wide receiver lineage. It's a very weird one, like you say. I mean, dude, OBJ and Jarvis Landry, neither of them went over 1,000 yards. Neither of them may have not have gone over 800 yards their senior year, or their last year in NCAA, which was the same year. But, yeah, I mean, you got going back to Dwayne Bowe. I mean, guys just didn't produce numbers in college but came in, and Dwayne Bowe had a few good years, you know.
Yeah.
All right, quickly, before we get on to the interview, Michael Gallup, I like him. I think he's redraftable. I think he's dynasty draftable. I put him right behind DJ, Calvin, and Kirk and Miller. I like him after those guys. I think wide receiver 36, 7, 8 is not a bad spot for Michael Gallup. I think he could easily lead the team in receptions. I think it'll be Allen Hurns, but I think Gallup is a solid dart throw.
Gallup put up hellacious numbers in college, And you know what? The role Dez Bryant had is probably not being filled by Allen Hurns. I mean, let's be very realistic about that. Gallup is more Dez Bryant than Allen Hurns will ever imagine being.
Yeah.
But he did come from a small school, and you just don't know how that translates to the NFL sometimes, sadly.
Man, I just cringe. I just cringe hearing Michael Gallup's name. There's a lot of there's just a ton. What are you doing? There's just a ton of question marks around Michael Gallup, to be quite honest. I don't know if his I don't know if he's going to translate to the Dallas Cowboys immediately.
I mean, he played 2 years at Colorado State. One had almost 1,300 yards and 14 touchdowns, and the next one had 100 receptions for 1,400 yards and 7 touchdowns. I mean,
dart throw
at his level, he was hands down the most talented person on the field every week.
But opportunity. Yeah. Mountain West. Opportunity.
There is opportunity there. I like your example of a dart throw. I mean, if you're good at darts, you're going to hit.
Absolutely. Well, we will do some more wide receivers and tight ends on the next episode, but we want you guys to make sure you get to hear the Steve Slayton interview. So without further ado. All right, guys. I got Steve Slayton with me. Unfortunately, my co-hosts weren't able to join. They're out of town on business. But, Steve, thanks for joining the show, man. I highly appreciate it from the bottom of my heart, man. I do appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. You're one of those guys. You know, I've been watching football for a long time, following West Virginia and other schools for a long time, and I just remember being so excited at, you know, what you came out and did your rookie year. And obviously I want to talk about a few things, something we just discussed before I hit the button. But yeah, as far as like these incoming rookies coming in at running back, first thing I kind of wanted to ask, is there anything that these guys should know before they put on the pads and hit the field for game one? Like what don't they see coming, in your opinion, Steve?
I think the biggest thing is to enjoy it. You know, that's first and foremost, you know, let, you know, that dream, that hard work take over and enjoy the moment. But there comes a point to where you have to learn to become a professional. And I think the biggest thing is finding a mentor, finding somebody who's been in the league, been successful, and try to follow their lead and pick their brain, see how they've been able to be successful and have the longevity of the season.
Who was that guy for you, Steve, if you don't mind me asking?
There was a lot of guys. I mean, I came in, Amon Green was running back, Chris Brown was a running back, but I'll say one of the bigger ones was the backup quarterback, Sage Rosenfels. You know, he's, you know, spoke to me about, you know, becoming a professional. It's like, you know, you can enjoy this moment, but keep working on it to stay around.
He's another one of those guys I love watching on social media, man. Sage seems like he has just a great time with life and just soaking it all in.
Yeah, definitely. He seems very social aware to where, you know, he's been fortunate. He played for over 10 years, and, you know, his tax bracket is different, but he does care about different things and about the people that are less fortunate. So I like seeing that side of him, and he's always been that type of person to look out for people that need to be looked out for.
Yeah, that's always good to hear, too. The consummate pro. And both you guys actually played for, you know, my Miami Dolphins, which makes me kind of happy that you mentioned yes. him and you as well yes. being on the show. So been a big Dolphins fan since I was, you know, just a young kid growing up in Southern Ohio. Everybody's watching the Bengals. And, you know, I remember being little and watching Dan Marino just launch one. And I'm like getting excited. My whole family's like, why are you excited about? I was like, that guy. That guy is what I'm excited about. But
very understandable.
Yeah. But another question I got real quick. I had a guy on. His name's Mitchell Renz, real swell guy in the fantasy football community. And he did a little write-up, a little piece about Jerick McKinnon, who's, you know, getting ready to start his first year in San Francisco and, you know, running under Kyle Shanahan. And part of the piece that he wrote was kind of a blind comparison. He put numbers side by side and athletic ability as far as the combine goes and, you know, what they did or what you did actually coming into the league under Shanahan in Houston. And I thought it was really interesting because I had talked to you a little bit already before he came on and he threw me for a loop on that one. So we're talking about Jerick McKinnon and Steve Slayton and just talking about how, you know, you absolutely blew up your rookie year and did that under Kyle Shanahan. And I don't know if you know anything about Jerick or know him, but what do you think he can expect playing under a guy like Kyle Shanahan this year?
I think I owe a lot of success to Kyle just because of how he utilized me. I think Kyle does well with athletes, putting them in the best position. He's a great, you know, he's been around football his whole life, you know, knows father. But he does well with getting plays or getting the ball in players' hands for them to make plays with.
Yeah, and that's exciting. I'm excited for Jarek. I'm excited for some of these rookies. Like, hopefully they can achieve what you did coming into the league and just taking the league by storm that year and showing what, you know, what kind of abilities you had. And speaking of abilities, I love following players like yourself, like Sage, and just catching up with what they're doing next in their life. And I saw and spoke to you a little bit about your thing. You're doing your thing as a chef in the Houston-Dallas area. Tell me a little bit about that. What got that started, how your interest peaked in that field, and what you love about it?
Well, I've always cooked since I was younger. My parents used to have a catering company, barbecue catering company. But it was one of those things to where, you know, I played football my whole life. That was one of my dreams. You know, that's off the checklist. It's like, what would I want to do after? And cooking was one of those things to where I enjoy, you know, there's so much I can learn from it and that I'll always be learning from it. So it's one of those things to where I was fortunate enough to go to culinary school, work with some good places to where it helps with my credibility. And right now I'm just doing personal chefing and a little kitchen consulting. Actually, one of my clients, he owns a bar, and he's handing over the reins for me to change up their bar menu. And everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you were telling me a little bit about that. How's that going?
It's going good. It's going good. Just right now, just really trying to break down all the recipes, how the menu is going to go, costing everything out, ordering everything. So all the back kitchen stuff. So it's fun. It's definitely a new title, new task, and I'm looking forward to completing it.
That's cool. That's another thing I'm somewhat interested in. I went to a guy in school with where I went to high school with. His name's Marcus Meacham, and he's one of those, you know, small town famous guys where we're from. He's been on the Taste Made channel, a few other places. He's always flying out to LA and doing cooking shows and stuff, and I always catch him and like, yeah, I'm proud of that guy. I went to school with that guy. It's really cool that he's doing that. And once I saw that you were doing the same thing, I was like, you know, just another thing that piqued my interest. Like, if I'm going to the Dallas-Houston area, which is possible, we got invited to the big fantasy football convention that Tony Romo and Ezekiel Elliott host every year.
Nice.
And if I'm down in that area and I go, you know, into a restaurant where, you know, Mr. Slayton's got the menu, what do you suggest once you got this menu done? What's your signature dish? What should I try if I head that way?
Well, since it's a bar, I think the problem with he'd had before I'd seen the menus that I don't think they were making that much money. I think food wise, you know, you go to a bar, you're going to a bar for bar food. But everything I think I'm a touch. I'm going to try to make it consistent and delicious. So I'm going to offer you the whole menu.
I could probably eat the whole menu too because I love food, man, especially bar food. Like my dude I went to school with, Marcus. He loves to take the American greats, the burgers and, you mm-hmm. know, the roast beef, just anything bar food, anything American food and just put a new twist on it. So I'll try just about anything, especially that kind of food.
Yeah. It's all, it's like comfort food. You know, well, American comfort food.
Yeah. If somebody puts good, calamari, good, somebody puts calamari in front of me, I'm just not sure what to do. Like, do I need a special utensil? Like, can I just eat this with my hands like a burger? I'm just not sure. So, man, do you still keep contact? We're where we live, you know, we're kind of bordering West Virginia almost, so we kind of frequent, you know, we go down that way to Mardi Gras, the casino. We go catch some Marshall games, some West Virginia games. You still have a lot to do with I know you live in the Houston-Dallas area, but do you still have a lot going on with, you know, some of your alums and guys down at West Virginia?
Yeah, I try to keep in touch with people as much as possible. But, you know, life comes at you fast. So yes, whenever I can, me and Pat and Maddie Stout, we have a podcast. But Pat accepted a new job as a football coach. So it's recruiting season. So it's kind of putting a fluctuation into our podcast time. So it was just, you know, one of those things that life throws at you. So we'll get back to it soon.
what's the name of that podcast? I'd love to listen to it, man. This has been like, this is kind of like my thing. Like my whole family plays music. You know, I got people that are into stuff and I've never found anything to be into. And then once I started this podcasting thing, it's like, okay, this is where my heart's at. Yeah. What's the name of that podcast? I'd love to check it out.
It is a Pat White podcast or PW Pod.
Another former Finn. I love it. Yeah. And you're talking Pat White, you know, quarterback that went to Miami. My favorite team there, the Finns. That's who we're talking about, right, Pat?
Yes. Yes. Yes, sir.
Good deal.
One and only.
Cool. It's good to know you still got connections down there. That's one of the things I like talking to folks about too. We talked to Chase Litton, quarterback that just went to Kansas City by way of Marshall. And probably one of the best things about talking to him was just hearing about his passion for some of his teammates, you know, old and present. And just good to hear, man. It's good to hear about those relationships that get built over the years through playing football.
It's a strong bond. It's, you know, sports itself is a fraternity itself. So, you know, that all that blood, sweat, and tears you spend in practice and in games, you kind of have a forever bond that, you know, reminds you of certain things.
Good deal. Well, man, I don't want to take up much of your time. There's going to be a lot of people excited to listen to what you got to say. You know, I'm not sure if you. I know a lot of players don't get into fantasy football much. I know some do. I mean, you're one of those guys that, you know, me and my buddies, when we were playing, it's just, you know, what can I get? What can I give you to get Steve Slayton off your hands, man? So what do you want that community to kind of know about you and just anything? What would you like them to know about Steve Slayton, the man, the chef, the football player?
That I appreciate having those guys, you know, follow me. It's funny that, that music's playing? Where is it coming from? But, It's funny that, you know, back when I started playing, I didn't really know too much about fantasy football, and it was great to hear guys come up to you, you know, be really into it. It seems like it makes the sport of football deeper, you know, because you have something else, a different aspect of football to really look after, and appreciate this guy's hard work. I feel like it's another job to play fantasy football and to be good at.
Yeah, and it something I love about it that I think some people, you know, don't talk about much is just some of the light it sheds on other players. Like, you know, when you play deeper leagues or with individual defensive players, like I've got to know so much about so many guys by playing that. Like one of the guys that's going to come on the show soon is Adam Carriker. And I know everything about that guy because I'm so, you know, I play this game and I, you know, we try to learn as much as we can about these guys, and it just, it's awesome to get to know everybody, not just the guys that came out like you and put 1,000 yards on paper your first season, not just the high draft picks, but just everybody. And I think it kind of brings everybody together in a sense, which is really cool.
Yeah, and that's what I think football should be. I think, you know, I think one of the greatest team sports on there. So you need all 11 guys on one accord to win a game.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've learned about football over the years that I, you know, wouldn't have known otherwise is just the way you guys love the game, the way you guys love each other on the field, the way you guys help each other out, even after your careers. And just one of those comforting things to know. I mean, it's 2018, the world's kind of crazy, but when you can reach out to guys and like yourself and you agree to come on here with me, like, you know, just people helping people, man. And again, yeah. I appreciate it.
No problem at all, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate giving this opportunity.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I'll definitely check out the Pat White show. Look forward to hearing. I know it's not going on right at the moment, but I'll backtrack those episodes. I'll listen to the ones you guys already put out there. So man, Steve, sounds thanks true. From the bottom of my heart, man. I appreciate it. I hope the chef thing continues to grow for you and you continue to knock it out of the park just like you did football. Thanks again, Steve. Thanks for contacting me, man. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Have a good day.
You too, buddy. Thank you.
This concludes another episode of the Back Row Fantasy Show. Thanks for listening, and be sure to give us a review.
C- Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money.